In this week, on the 21st of May, 2011, Seb Brown saved two Luton penalties to set Danny Kedwell up to shoot the Dons into the Football League. I took my daughter to the playoff final when we were both nearly in tears when Danny Kedwell scored that penalty. Supporter Barry Faust recalled, "I was happy for so many people, not just the club or myself, but for Ivor Hedo and the others who started it all. I was thinking about them with a tear in my eye. I want to thank them and all the players for making the dream come true." As Seb Brown said, "This is our time." We're the same old Wombles. We're back. Hello, hello, dear listener. Oh my God, it's happening again. It's happening again. Good grief. Hello, my name is Matt Cooper, and this evening I am joined by my friend Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall, how are you doing?
This is our time.
I'm joined with the man with the buttons, our producer, Mr. Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. You're right?
Yeah, I'm not gonna come up with a slogan. If we all said this is our time, Blimey, we've already done our cool video. No, I'm good. I'm good. Yes, obviously, I'm pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
Excellent. And our football guru, our man with the knowledge, the man who had to delay recording a podcast last night so he could do some celebratory quizzing in the Alex, Mr. Mark Lewis.
Good evening, dear listener. I have to apologise. An apology and a correction to start with. It was Danny Kebbard that said this is our time before he stepped up to hit that penalty
Yeah,
for
he
Seb
did.
Brown.
Didn't see
And yeah, the reason we're
Brown.
delayed by a day is because I was doing the quiz with Mick Dore. Anyone who does a quiz in the Alex on a Monday night, I'm afraid there is no quiz next Monday night because apparently there's something going on at Wembley Stadium, which may impact the ability for anyone in central Wimbledon to get a drink, but we're not going to count our chickens
No,
whatsoever.
we are not counting chickens. And I mean, it is just about, we're back at Wembley. I mean, this is just incredible. And I was talking to people. It feels like, to be honest with you, the pressure is off. It feels like, yes, we're going there to win, but it feels like, Walsall, who are our opposition next week, they were top of the table come Christmas, on sort of like the last game of the season. They were a kick away from being promoted third, only for Bradford to score a fluky goal. They've gone through the playoffs, and it feels to me a bit like this is their last chance. Whereas for us, I think we'd have taken getting into the playoffs. I mean, obviously the last couple of months have been horrendously frustrating to see us getting on the brink and then sort of throwing things away. But at the start of the season, I think, the playoffs was what we were aiming for, and here we are. It's been an incredibly exciting time, an amazing day on Saturday. I was incredibly tense. I don't know how all you were feeling in the lead up to the game on the day. Mark.
Good to do a quick name check again.
Yeah.
I mentioned a couple of pods ago about going up to Grimsby, and I saw Barry and his wife Karen and various other people. We had lunch together on the pier. I asked her on the train on the way up how optimistic she felt, and she didn't feel optimistic at all. I saw her very early on while I was zooming around doing my last ever program stint pre-match, and I said, "So how on a scale of 1 to Grimsby do you feel?" And she said, "Even worse, even less optimistic." So I'm expecting hopefully to see her on the way up to Wembley. And if she says that she's feeling even worse again, then that's obviously a lucky omen, frankly.
Excellent. Adam, how are you, mate? Because you had to set off at
Yeah, I had to set off a bit
whatever o'clock
earlier.
in the morning.
Yeah, it wasn't too
Yeah.
early, but it's just earlier than I'd like. As
Yeah.
people on the pod know, I'm a creature of habit, and that broke my
Yeah.
habit. Yeah, no, I mean, I was kind of just stressed on the way, you know. I was like, it was ours to throw away, obviously. You know, we're back at home. We knew it was going to be really busy. It proved to be really busy, which made half time interesting. And yeah, it was. And
By interesting, you mean Elior being shit again?
Yeah, that's correct, Mark. They didn't seem to know what they were doing when we had loads of people there. Every time we have everyone there, they seem to completely lose their minds. They didn't, the speedy bar, they didn't know what the speedy bar was anymore. So I had to inform them of how the speedy bar thing works. Then what else? They sold out, they've run out of food of some capacity from what I could tell. And the lady, they basically, there was a bit of a big argument between a lot of people in the queue. And let's just say the customer service was lacking at that point.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, there have been complaints following that game. I mean, Eleanor were one, but I mean, like, I think people now come to expect that, really. So I'd be very interested to know who gets the contract, because that's coming up for renewal, and if they're gonna bid for it.
I don't normally. Obviously the beer robots have gone again. I don't know what I thought they came back and they've gone again. And then the speedy bar, basically normally I go, what happened was I went to the toilet, came out, thought, oh, I'll just queue because I couldn't remember the new speedy bar app or whatever. And I think I had the wrong card in it. Anyway, I got in the queue. Some guy in the queue said, this isn't the back of the queue. Have you just joined the queue? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, the back of the queue's there. And I'm like, all right, mate, cheers. So anyway, I left that queue because I'd obviously joined in the middle of the queue, not realising. Didn't do it on purpose. And then I got the speedy bar thing to work, printed out a ticket. And normally you go down to where the concession bit is and there's loads of like beers already poured out. And there's one person there just taking the tickets and you just take one. And there was literally no beers pre-poured, like none. And so, and another guy joined the queue next to me and said, oh, this is the speedy bar queue. And I'm like, no, that's the regular queue. That's speedy bar queue's here. They just don't understand it. And he's like, no, this is a speedy queue. I'm like, that's not the speedy queue. I do the speedy queue. I know what it is, right? And it was rubbish.
I'm loving it. Adam, there's always going to be something. We're going to get onto the good stuff in a minute. But I just want to bring something else up, which is that in the lead up to the match, everyone was talking about bringing yellow and blue balloons. And it was really exciting. And when you came in, you know, you could see. But the stewards had obviously been told, no balloons, and they seem to take great pleasure in taking balloons off children and other people and bursting them. So they're really enjoying that moment.
There's one guy like chasing a balloon down the steps. I'm like, he's gonna break his neck chasing after the balloon, right? There's the danger, not the balloon.
I know, and I saw a balloon on the pitch, and all the crowd were going, there's a balloon on the pitch, you know. It's just, you know, it's sometimes.
Can I just like, jump in here, like, right?
Yeah,
like. Right. The game was one of the best atmospheres I've known at Plough Lane for a very long time.
Amazing.
Absolutely buzzing. It was a fantastic game. And we spent the first 10 minutes of the pod talking about beer being rubbish and balloons. Like, I mean, you know,
that's the way we're getting the bad stuff out of the way first, Niall. This is it.
We're supposed to be like the kind of positive vibe.
We are positive. Yeah, we are asking.
Dear listener who's kindly tuned in, right, from now on in, we're going to be positive. Well, actually, I say that. I mean, you guys have been listening to me for weeks about our performances on the pitch, so I shouldn't really say anything. But, like, just for Adam for next year. Just sort it out because poor Adam.
It's not me. It's not me. We're losing money.
But he also comes into the terrace, sits behind us. And like we're 1-0 up, the atmosphere's buzzing, and all Adam is talking about is about how bad the beer queue is for at least 10 minutes of the second half.
When we're sold out like that, you know, we literally were losing money. That's what stresses me out, and that's what they don't get.
Basically,
everybody, whoa, let's have some time out here. We've just gone through the bad stuff. We're all right. Let's hear it. Let's get zen. We're all calm. Mama. We're all good. We're all calm. It was as Niall, as you say, getting in there, the place was buzzing. It was, you know, for the minute you got in, there was the biggest crowd. I was hearing people all throughout in the food court saying they've not seen it so busy. It was just fantastic. And getting in to Plough Lane and seeing, I mean, because people had to buy tickets, you had to be there. There were no empty seats. It was just absolutely chocker everywhere you look. Mark, come on in.
There was one empty seat.
No, don't flipping grumble. Niall's told you off. No grumbling.
No, I'm not grumbling at all. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I mean, there are some fans, some clubs that do, you know, they give the crowd the number 12 on the team sheet or whatever, which I always thought was a bit sycophantic bollocks, frankly. But the south stand behind the goal.
Oh, amazing.
Even after they flipped us round so that we wouldn't be attacking our own fans.
Yeah.
They have been all the way through the season, through loads of really boring, really dull games, really uninspiring games when the team needed some oomph. Really, I think since that midweek game against Crewe, when we won 3-0 quite straightforwardly, they've been absolutely on it. And everybody responded to that. I think the barometer of how engaged the whole crowd was is my missus, because she likes football watching Wimbledon. She doesn't like football in general to watch and follow. She just doesn't have any interest in it. Doesn't understand why I want to watch, you know, highlights of the Premier League or England or whatever. Anyway, they're doing the whole, you know, main stand bounce around, and she's up and she's dancing and she's bouncing around, you know.
It was great. And I mean, like the whole stand, everyone, the whole ground, everyone was up. I mean, it must have been, I'd like to have seen what it's been like from another point of view to see that everyone was up bouncing around.
Seeing that, when the south stand starts in Plough Lane, bounce around, and Plough Lane bounced around. It was awesome.
Yeah. But let's go back, because what we were really looking for was obviously that early goal. And there was a moment just before we scored where they shouted out for a penalty. And I've looked back on it, it's just the most ridiculous call for a penalty. But they were still obviously really aggrieved and angry from the game. In actual from the previous game. In actual fact, I was speaking to at an event I was at on Sunday. And they didn't take that defeat well at all. They were really, really angry. So then to get that first goal, and what an amazing goal it was. I mean, just beautiful.
The thing on that one is, especially where you go sit a little further around, and or equally where I sit as well, it was one of those, and it doesn't happen very often, where you can see that the ball is going in before some of the players on the pitch, let alone the rest of the stadium. So you're already on your way up to celebrate before the other 8,000 or whatever actually can react.
I mean, that was the thing. I really like where we sit. I think our angle is great. I also like the fact that, yeah, we stand up occasionally and get excited, but everyone is quite courteous at sitting down. So it's not, you know, which I like. But yeah, Mark, the angle that we were at, like, you could see it was going in before it was in. And so, you know, and I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's like the anticipation of things can be more exciting than the moment itself. And the fact that I could see it was going in, it was just like unbelievable. I thought fantastic early goal. I mean, and I wasn't, even though it was really early, I wasn't worried then. That was the thing. Whereas in previous games, that would have stressed me out. But we had something going on. I don't know what, you know, again, maybe Mark could talk a bit more about the formation. We definitely did some good stuff. We had obviously switched Josh Nerville and Tilly around at some point and then changed it again. But yeah, that goal was great.
I think we properly identified who the threats were, McGoldrick was injured and Jatta was not involved. Really, the only threat, as it transpired, was Jody Jones. And they swapped Tilly and Nerville to basically try and negate that, Nerville obviously being quicker than Jones. And to be honest, after they went behind so early, it got to the point literally after 10 or 15 minutes where Notts were playing, I don't know what formation you call it, but essentially they were leaving their two centre-backs on the halfway line and everyone else was bombing on, which is how those chances were created for Brown.
Yeah,
but I don't think the formation was any different. Brown was playing up front. It transpires, obviously, Bugle is injured. Apparently, he has an MCL injury, which may or may not, therefore, rule him out for the final and mainly in operation. I honestly don't know. But actually, for me, Brown and especially Stevens, I thought Stevens had his best game for a long time. Stevens really looked like a proper threat. And it was almost, and Stevens obviously is a boxer, was a boxer in a previous incarnation, as they say. Stevens squaring up against the centre back, who was a good 6 or 7 inches taller than him, he really was up for that, and he looked so much. But he had the header, which Bassman had a really good save for. But even without that header, he actually looked like a complete and utter pest. And unfortunately, as I've said before, the reason, well, was the reason that the chances were missed because they fell to Brown, not to Stevens? I don't know. But fortunately, we didn't ended up ruining those missed chances because we could comfortably have won 3-4-0.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was interesting. I think for a couple of those Brown chances, it was quite good defending in the end. I mean, they goofed up, but then they were getting back, and it seemed to get. I watched the amazing uncovered plough lane uncovered, which is brilliant. And it does look like sometimes when the ball just gets caught under his feet. And there's another moment in the first half where Stevens is kind of coming through and the ball's just not sitting for him. It's a great kick out from Goodman. And it just looks like the ball's not sitting for him properly. So it was all. Niall, what was your take on it all? Okay, we need to get him off mute. So.
No, I wasn't on mute. I was just pressing the wrong button. That's what happened. That's all that happened. And I was speaking.
Not like you've never done a Zoom call.
Yeah. What was your thoughts?
Do you know what? I mean, like, once we won 1-0 up, that really settled our nerves, didn't it? I mean, that made a massive difference. Because I think the way we play, having teams come onto us is perfect. You know, it really helps. So when somebody has to come out and win, that's where we were creating those chances. And, you know, our defence is pretty good. So the issue I've got is we need somebody else to put the ball in the bloody net, because we had chances that most teams would expect to be scoring when you've got a couple of clean one-on-ones. And when you look back, yes, it was a great save by Bass, but Stevens was in the middle of the goal, 6 yards out, free header. He's our top goal scorer. So, really?
Well, we're not being negative.
Yeah, wait a minute. We're not being negative.
What's that about? You asked. Sorry. Right. But Nerfield's goal was immense. I mean, like, you know, we're doing our awards, right? And we will be presenting them at the Will Nightingale Testimonial. And I can't, you know, the goal of the season award has just moved in my mind, because that Nerfield goal was.
Do we have a goal of the season award?
No, we don't have a goal of the season. We don't.
But that Nerfield goal was just amazing. I mean, it was just, it's absolutely, the way he's controlled it, the way he's then, like, just done that brilliant, delicate little lob, which is inch perfect. It's just quality, pure quality goal.
Yeah.
You know, really, really, really good. And that just basically was like,
it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think as a fan, I never relaxed. I mean, I didn't, right the way through. But I think as a neutral,
I'm not saying I was like, you know, totally chill. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't totally chill, but that bloody helps a lot.
Oh, yeah, it totally did. I mean, and because it made the crowd buzz. I mean, the crowd were completely buzzing. It was fantastic. But it was, yeah, I mean, as I think we all were all so nervous. And recently we went back to that bit where we were able to give away one or two goals in the last, well, in extra time, weren't we? So it was really, it was still quite nerve-wracking. But I think as a neutral look at it, it would just go, we soaked up everything. And in actual fact, I think over the course of that 90 minutes, Goodman made, what, one save? I mean, it just didn't look.
But that was like 71st minute or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he hardly had anything to do. In actual fact, the only thing he really had to do was try and fish himself out of the crowd after the final whistle, because he was jumping in.
It did look like someone was trying to nick his glove or something. I was going to say, I'm not going back to the negative, but hopefully Bugle is an option for Monday. But I have, Stevens and Brown, they looked good, but they need to score. And I'm a bit worried that their confidence has gone a little bit. Like Stevens, I felt like sometimes the ball was doing weird things under him. Sometimes I'm thinking, is he looking for an extra touch because he's not as confident as he was? You know, a couple of things went against him with the ref, you know, where he was maybe a little bit more of a boxer than he should have been. But yeah, Nerfield comes out and scores at Wembley, fine, whatever. But I'm just saying it'd be good if they could.
Yeah, it's a reasonable point to make, but frankly, I'd say Stevens looked like a striker on Saturday.
Yeah.
And he had really looked like a bit of a spare part for a number of games before then. And also, Brown had played up front with him beforehand and really not looked like he was going to achieve much either. But it looked like, as a group, they had a proper focus, which was, you know what? Give it a large Brown for a good 65 minutes or so, and then we will bring on Kelly, who is a striker, who is an absolute pest, who is absolute Speedy Gonzalez compared to anything else in League Two. And yes, you want him to score and you want him to get a chance, and he didn't get either of those, but he was an absolute pest. And lots of Notts fans on social were very, very amusing for us, obviously, because we're the winning team, but rather frustrated themselves because they just stuck to plan A. Even in the 87th minute, when they needed at that point to score three goals in 3 minutes, they still stuck to plan A. And because we were pressing them very high, and even though that press dropped off when the strikers came on, and it was, again, a good move to bring Sasu on rather than to bring Pickett on, that press continued again. And as a result, they couldn't get out. They resorted to hitting it long. They had no target man, and it was all a bit pointless.
Yeah. I mean, we did just look comfortable. And just a brilliant team performance. In actual fact, the last three games, and I think, Mark, you were saying that I think whatever happened at half-time at Grimsby, from that half-time at Grimsby onwards, we've just looked like the team we were earlier in the season.
Just strip it back for a minute and ask yourself, how does a team progress up the table? How does a team look like they're going to be able to be promoted or win a particular cup competition? They do so by keeping clean sheets. They do so by winning games, even by small margins. We've just won three games in a row, 1-0. Not yep. glamorous, not pretty, not big, or particularly clever. However, having been at Grimsby, having not seen the first playoff game, but certainly seen the second one, two out of three of those games, certainly, that I saw, we looked very comfortable. Not counting any chickens whatsoever, but we have just strung three results together, as have Walsall, to be fair.
Yeah.
And it's deservedly in the playoff final. And the trickery that Adoma came out with for their last minute goal was absolutely world class, almost for a 37-year-old. But we now have the winning habit back again. I don't even remember, and I don't have the stats to hand, as to when we last won three games this season, if we ever did that. But we did do that, and we have done that. And even smart things like taking Harbottle off at half time in a little twinge, and he'd also been booked. You bring yep. Olds on, nobody notices. In fact, yep. nobody's in any way distressed, because in fact, Olds is a better option overlapping or underlapping Nerfil, for example.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it could have gone wrong, because I think one of the first things that Olds did when he came on in the second half was give away a free kick on the edge of our penalty area. But he is. You're right, it doesn't notice a difference. And that's brilliant. To have that across the back, I think, is absolutely fantastic. And now we're there. Walsall await us on Monday at Wembley. And it's all, I mean, we're, you know, I was just looking now, and apparently at this point already, and the tickets have been on sale for what, just over 24 hours or so, we're at 15,000. So that's 15,000 already. They go on general release on Wednesday, I believe. So, which will be when this podcast comes out. So get your tickets is what I'm trying to say. But it feels like, you know, we could potentially have over 30,000 people in the Wimbledon end.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you guys, you know, with friends and family or whatever, but I've had a couple of old workmates that have come to games in the last couple of years. All three of them are coming. Within probably 12 hours of the final result, I had a text from a friend of mine. He's a Norwich fan. Went to uni with him. He's been to a few games way back at Selhurst, going back many, many decades. Hasn't been to many games generally. Doesn't get to many games, even though he lives in Essex and supports Norwich. And he said, "Look, mate, I was at the Plymouth game. So obviously, I'm coming to this game, aren't I? Get me a ticket." It's like, yeah, fine, no problem. So I think I've got, well, obviously with a little help from yourselves. It's probably worth talking about how we got tickets together, because for an organised band of professional individuals, the way we tried to organise tickets and where we were sitting and how many tickets we bought was, frankly, utterly shambolic.
It was Shabalenka, but I blame, I mean, me particularly, because I was saying, I identified this block. Block 240 is where most of the same old one was going to be. Apart from Adam, who's gone off on one, and he's sitting down in the
block
row, the block below. Yeah, but it's so I was desperately looking for that on my phone. At the same time, I'm waiting for a hospital appointment, so I'm in the waiting room of a hospital. I haven't even checked in. I refuse to check in before I've got my tickets all sorted. Oh man, that was really, really stressful. And the screen was so small, and it kept, when it's on your mobile phone, it kept going smaller or then big. And oh, anyhow, I ended up getting I couldn't get in that 240, so I was in the block over 241. But it was very stressful. Very stressful situation. Again, running, I felt like I was against the clock.
Well, I thought originally it was going to be really stressful for me because I was down to be buying everyone's tickets because we have three season tickets. And I thought, okay, that's fine. I can probably do that. And then, of course, we were originally talking about blocks 130, 131. And that's similar to where I sat before, actually, in the last playoffs, but on obviously the opposite side. And then, yeah. Mark said, no, I like the look of 240. I thought my dad wouldn't go for that one because I've got a feeling he quite liked where we were sat sort of before and doesn't want to be too far away. And I'm like, whatever, it's cool. So then, yeah, at that point, we obviously devolved. But originally, I thought, oh my word, I'm going to have to do all the tickets. And if I get this wrong, like, people are going to kill me, basically. And then I thought I had a free day. I thought, oh, I've got like days, just like few tutorials with students. Won't be a problem. Thankfully, by this time we devolved our activities. I realised that I actually had I had a meeting that I had to be at and actually pay attention. So I was like, oh no. So I messaged my dad and said, Dad, just get the tickets that we need. Block wherever you want, like sort it out. And he was like, yeah. So he was on it, which was great. So we got five tickets total. So that's, yeah, all good, which is quite cool. So, yeah, I mean, you guys just throw stuff at me.
They probably won't hear this, but we'll give him another name check because he's come to the game. Jermaine, who came to the Port Vale game, who Adam met, and Dom, they're both coming to the final. And obviously, they're going to end up sitting in the spare seats that Niall's got because Niall and Matt, even though the brothers couldn't actually coordinate where they were sitting together.
Hold on.
Oh,
the
wait
spare
a minute.
Seats Matt got.
Yeah,
Matt
I got the spare.
Right?
Yeah.
I got the ones in 240.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're sitting in 241.
Yeah,
so I told them they're a little bit ahead, in front of us, to which I'm now literally, as we're recording this podcast, getting insults bantering on WhatsApp, basically along the lines of, don't piss on our heads. The response to that from someone else is, I wouldn't piss on you if I was on fire. Are you on fire?
That's
thing. You know, these are grown men who are bantering like this.
Dear me. You see, you can take the... You can take the men out of the football, but you can't take the football out of the men.
But this is the mad thing. You've got a Man U fan, an Everton fan, and a Chelsea fan, the three of them, and they're all coming supporting the Wombles.
Yep. Too right.
Like I said, I found out on the Discord as well, because I was just trying to ask people that. So we've been allocated Box Park, and there's sort of loads of pubs as well. There's a big list of specific pubs.
The Green Man, apparently, is the one that a lot of people
The Green
like.
Man that most people are going to, yeah. And the Box Park would be quite fun, but because I think the Box Park
we're
is the way... Isn't but yeah well I know but the Box Park is on the way to the stadium, isn't it? From when, so that's an easy one to get to. Whereas the Green Man is like beyond the stadium if you're coming on the
tube. No, just go. I looked at it. I looked it up online earlier. You just have to walk in a slightly longer loop.
So yeah, it's behind then, Mark.
But the
don't.
Not behind it. No, it's just slightly differently on the way just, there.
Yeah. It's further.
Detour is the word I'm looking for.
Well, I think, as you guys know, my dad will want to be there as early as possible so that he's not worrying about getting into the stadium in any capacity. So I think we'll probably end up going as early to Box Park as possible just because he'll want the simplest, straightest.
Whereas what you will do by doing that is I'm under the impression that Tom Northwood...
Time to believe!
...will probably join me and Matt and Oberge.
Yep. So we're going some fancy French food first, and then heading over on the Jubilee to Wembley about 2 o'clock.
Dear listener, if you'd like to join us, we will be in Auberge in Waterloo, near Waterloo train station. eating probably steak and chips and having Matt probably having a bottle of red wine or two with probably about 15, 16 of us or something in there. So you're more than welcome to come and join us in Auberge.
Well, that's where to avoid.
Get the Jubilee line straight up to Wembley.
You know what, though? Yeah. It is funny how we're all like going back to our actual rituals, because obviously you guys come in from South East London, so that's all on your route there, which makes a lot of sense. I said to my lot, my son and my daughter coming with us, actually, the first thing I should just quickly flick back to is the final whistle. The final whistle, obviously, we're all quite engaged, quite emotional and quite stressed and whatever by the thing. At the final whistle, there's a group behind us that we've got to know. We've never said hello. We said hello. We never said, who are you? What's your name? Whatever. But there's a lady and her sister and I think someone's boyfriend and then someone's dad and some other mates. And there's about six of them that come. A couple of them came to Gillingham. We never said anything on the way back from Gillingham. We just exchanged glances about how bad it was. And then at the final whistle, they were like hovering with their phones like you're at a Taylor Swift gig or something. And it turned out they were taking photographs of me and my wife and my daughter, because we all got a bit emotional, as they say. And even though, you know, my son and my daughter were 18, it was a bit of a moment. I had a bit of a moment, even on the concourse. I met a mate of mine who I've known literally all my life. We grew up in the same road together. He's a Wimbledon fan, Gavin. And he was trying to say hello and great, how are you doing, great, and everything else. And I was literally almost crying because I was trying to explain to my son and my daughter, as a Wimbledon boy from Wimbledon, how amazingly proud this whole moment made me feel. And then randomly, quick shout out to Alex Keefe, if Alex does listen to the pod, she's the lady in the thing behind us, because she just sent me these pictures, and I think you guys have seen them, I may have forwarded them on our group chat. There's one of like all of us punching the air at the final whistle, and there's one of the four of us just embracing, and my wife, bless her, at 5'2¾", is completely engulfed by the three of us because we're all like 5'10" or taller. It's really quite amazing how sometimes the emotion kind of overtakes you. And that was even before you have to the final.
Well, I think Niall's got a great story here about the end of that final whistle.
The final whistle, right? Those of us who have sat around that realise that there is somebody else who's followed the Dons from our family for quite a long time, but obviously she wasn't at the game because she is travelling around Southeast Asia and is in Bali. But the wonders of Snapchat meant that for the last few seconds of the game and definite final whistle, there watching the game on Snapchat was my daughter, Amelia, watching over the whole of the pitch and all of that. And there is a fantastic selfie taken of me, Matt, and a mobile phone with Amelia's smiley face on it.
Yeah. Oh, that is amazing.
That's great.
And that is a quality picture. And you can see the little reflection on Amelia of the pitch with some of the players actually celebrating on the mobile phone. It is quality. That is ace. And I've sent that to Amelia. She only got that today. And she was like, that is just the best selfie ever.
Now, Niall, that now that we can talk about the game, because we couldn't talk about it beforehand, that she was going to get home in time for the final?
She, problem is, she can't. She's still got another week. She's still like, it's like if it was, I think if it was 2 or 3 days before the end, probably, but like she's got a whole week before she's due back.
Trip of a lifetime, playoff final, you know.
Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? But she's done most of the trip.
She is. She is going to probably, she's looking to make the Nightingale game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm delighted my daughter's going to be there, and she's bringing along a friend of hers from her football team and her dad, and so it's going to be buzzing. I'm very excited by it, and Jez and Jack are going to be there as well. Mates have come along, Wimbledon fans. But I want to get onto a couple of other things just to say, because what I find interesting about this is for League Two, and I'm not sure the last time this has happened, that it's actually the top two sides in the playoffs against each other. Because usually it feels to me like it's the side that creeps in at seventh that get in there. So I'd be interested to know, because my understanding is that that's not been the case for a long time. So this is the in theory the best two teams who are in the playoffs points wise are playing off against each other, which is going to be fantastic. The other thing which I'm excited about is a couple of initiatives I've seen floating about. Obviously, Graham Stacey Doobs did a brilliant job in getting that 125k following the pitch, the flood disaster. And, you know, it was like 113 teams donated. And I know he's trying to contact them and make sure that there's a rep from each of those 113 teams who's at the ground, if they possibly can. I mean, it's going to be interesting because I think some of those international as well. But I know that that's one of the things. And we're right behind that. It's a fantastic idea. But something that's came out today, which I think is brilliant, and this is sort of like a DLAG initiative, is a crowdfunding campaign to get as much money as possible to give to kids in the area that simply cannot afford tickets. So I think that idea is to raise about 10K. It's almost up about 2K at the moment. And it's only been going since Tuesday afternoon. So if we can raise as much money as possible to get to make sure that those people that can't afford tickets, I mean, I think generally speaking, tickets don't seem to, I wouldn't say that they're majorly expensive in comparison, but, you know, we're in difficult times and these are extra matches that people can't afford. So if you can give whatever, even a quid or something, I think that's brilliant. It's a brilliant initiative. Let's try and raise so much money as possible to fill it full of those fans that really want to be there that just can't afford it.
Yeah, well said. And we can put the link onto the pod this week when we put it, obviously, on the various social media outlets to be able to engage and download. Great initiative overall. And obviously, we are a community club, genuinely, properly a community club. And given, you know, the history with playing at Celeste and playing at Wimbledon, playing at King's Meadow and so on, then you would like to think that from across the different boroughs, from Wandsworth, from Merton, from Croydon, from other Kingston, other parts of South West London overall, anywhere basically apart from South East London, who were going the day before for the Orient against Cheltenham game, then will attract a larger group. I mean, how many, we're recording this, as we said, Tuesday evening. Do we genuinely think we might take 30,000 or more, or are we overreaching there?
Well, I think that's a distinct possibility.
We're 15,000 in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And you think that some of our normal season ticket holders may well or not have got their act together in time, potentially. And then you're then thinking about all the other people that are going on general sale. And like, I mean, so the only thing is there's an awful lot of London teams in playoff finals, but you know, I think there's a soft spot in London for us. And I think the amount of imprint that we now have back in Wimbledon is noticeable. And we were speaking on the way back, you know, and talking about it and running into, well, I don't forget his name. Anyway, Matt, you know the person I'm talking about. I've completely forgotten his name.
Oh, yeah. Who's your flip it? Aaron.
No, not Aaron. We spoke to Aaron.
Yeah.
But it was the other. I've got, anyway, whatever. The point being is that now we're in a situation where the season tickets plus members.
Angus Fox. Angus Fox.
It was not Angus Fox, Matt.
Yeah. We spoke to lots of people on the way out. We spoke to lots of people on the way out.
We did speak to a lot of people on the way out.
I spoke to Chris Stewart. The first thing Chris Stewart said to me was, were we allowed to actually sing Case of Arsenal now? Because all through the second half from the fans,
yeah, I know people were singing
about
it.
Four rows in front of us, and my wife and I were just going, "Shut up, shut up!"
It was so funny.
Me and Matt were saying, "We are not singing it."
You can hear people singing "Que sera, sera," and there were people behind us. You could hear them saying, "Shh, shh."
Yeah, my dad definitely was like, "No."
just for the benefit,
we were telling people where to go with that one.
That was so funny.
It was Graham Price. I was talking to Graham Price.
Oh, right, okay.
Right. And Graham Price, we've talked about football governance. You could tell there were lots of us gathered, and me and Graham were talking about all that sort of stuff, and everybody else was like drifting off into it's like,
yeah, you managed to kill the vibe.
But the point being is that what we were talking about is that we're in a place where,
yeah,
clearly Plough Lane is too small for us.
It's going to reach capacity.
And when we're looking at people buying tickets for the game, you know, you the demand is already outdoing supply for Plough Lane. And then you think about a game like that where everybody else is going to be breaching in. Anybody who's been to one game a season is probably going to want to be at the playoff final. And then there's a whole load of other people in Wimbledon that are now feeling an affinity that they never had because the club is in Wimbledon properly now. I think we're definitely going to be close to getting 30,000, I'd have thought. 15,000 in 24 hours.
Yeah, I think you're right now. And I think there's going to be a lot of people now who are, aren't season ticket holders or aren't, I think there was something around debentures. So that's just come out as well. So my sense is that we'll probably be about 20,000 odd by, you know, Wednesday afternoon.
And while we're talking about shout outs, major props should go to Danielle and Luke and anyone else working and helping out in the ticket office, because it seems to have been relatively smooth. There was a dementia issue, as we said, but I think that was technology as opposed to anything else. And then I sort of think from Matt Haylock, the club shop manager, who he logged on Sunday morning, Monday morning, and he'd had like 500 odd orders, and he and Hayden, his assistant, did it all in one day. Next day they got even more. And they're actually getting all these orders out straight away. And I know he spoke to me about a month ago saying, we've got stuff ready, but not really obviously publicising it because we didn't want to count our chickens again. In terms of if we were in the playoff final, he just has to push a button, so to speak, and they would have it ready. And they're having them delivered, I think, Wednesday or Thursday, you know?
Awesome. Now, it's quite funny, dear listeners. So I feel this has become the radio DJ show where we've got shout outs for people all over the place. If anyone wants a dedication, just do drop us a line and we'll give you a call out.
We've got to give Trisha a shout out because
what's going on? What's happening with the shout outs?
I'll just give a big shout out to Matty Everard and John Scales, who we obviously ran into on Saturday, and the former said he's going to join us on the pod soon. So watch out for this potential Matty Everard opportunity.
Brilliant. Is there any more anyone wants to get out? I'd just like to thank my mum.
You should mention the John Scales evening with John Scales and Effa Nkuku and David Barnard and various other people, which is going out tomorrow night, 21st, which is Wednesday evening, if you listen to this.
Get down to Plough Lane tonight.
Yeah, or what you could do is get on the website and check out all this news. Get on the AFC Wimbledon website. They've got all the news there. What is this?
Yeah, stop making
That's why people are calling
critical.
Us the official website. Do you know what I mean? Dear me.
Yeah, it's not official. We're not a website.
Nothing official at all. I have relinquished my duties as any kind of program seller or golden goal seller or anything else. And therefore, there's nothing official about us. Never was. Never will be anymore.
Now then,
we definitely
the other bit of news.
There's more news. This that better not be on the website.
This isn't a call out. This isn't a call out. This is a good thing. There was a lovely piece. Yes, it is on the website about Sam Hutchinson and his experience of, you know, the heart attack, because he genuinely had a heart attack. He had to go to Nottingham to have to be assessed and then had a stent fitted. And, you know, it's clear that what he was really upset about is he thought this might be the end of his career, but it's wasn't as bad as what happened to Ericsson. He's not had a defibrillator fitted or anything like that. So he's got a stent in, but he was apparently back out and running, and he's very keen. He's looking forward to next season. And in the interview, he was saying, you know, it seemed to be saying that he wants to be back with us. It'd be interesting to see whether that happens, but he's gutted. He can't be playing on Monday. In his mind, he thinks he can. So, but I just, it's just brilliant.
A stent is a really interesting operation, that one, because it is an instant fix.
Yeah.
So you've got a bit of scar tissue and stuff like that, but it is, having been in major heart surgery and having got in for a stent before, and then it didn't happen for me for a whole load of complicated reasons, but there were five people ahead of me getting stents put in, and they were all like wheezing and incapable and all the rest of it. And then they go in, came out of their operations, and every single one of them was basically bouncing out. I mean, they were like fitted and sorted immediately. So stent is a really magic thing. It's quite weird like that. So I can get why Sam Hutchinson probably thinks he can play.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably, realistically, probably 3 or 4 weeks away from being fit enough to play. That's the thing with a stent.
I mean, he's very.
He could play on Monday.
Yeah, he's very. No, he's.
Imagine J. Dog just naming him as a sub.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully he'll be on the bench watching. But also, what's serendipitous about it in a weird way is that the game is at 3:01, and it's put back a minute for this British Heart Foundation campaign, which is about raising awareness of CPR, and it only takes a minute to learn that. So, which is, you know, fantastic campaign, and it's a really lovely thing that we're involved with. I want to get on because we're getting towards the end, and there's a couple of things. Clearly, we're not going to have a football song. I mean, I'm upset, to be honest with you. I think any time we get to Wembley, there should be some sort of song. Although I have noticed that there is a new rendition of something that the team seems to come out to now onto the pitch. Gosh, I can't remember that, but there seems to be a new sort of Wimbledon sort of folk kind of like song that's come that we come out onto now. We should get Philo in again to talk us through that. But there's not going to be a song. We haven't put one together at the same old Wombles. Maybe we should have done. Maybe that should be our next thing, is a song. Adam, if you can produce that, that'd be brilliant. But the next thing I want to talk about is the awards. And obviously, the club awards came out last week. And because we're not being negative, Niall, we're not going to go into that too much. Although
it was still embarrassing.
Although it could have been done maybe, I don't know, a million times better. it just like, what is this about? Anyhow, but the thing about it is, dear listener, as you know, we have our own special awards. We've got the same old Womble Awards. And I'm excited to say that we're gonna tell you what the awards are and who's been nominated. And we will be presenting these awards, as Niall rightly said earlier on, at the Will Nightingale Testimonial. The club don't know about it. Will doesn't know about it. We're not even sure if we're going to get the cups made in time, but we're excited to be able to do this.
We can't present awards we haven't got.
Yeah, I know. But then I don't know what we'll do. We'll just buy some cans of Coke or something and write on them. So the first award is the Harry Pell Award for Best Non-In-Match Moment. And the nominees are... I should have sent this around to everyone so we could have had one each. The nominees are Graham Stacey for raising over 125K following the flood. John Green for buying Marcus Brown. D-Lag for generally being brilliant. Wimbledon Sport and History for the 75 Bats for Boys reunion. And we've had another nomination that's come in, which is Josh Nerville's mum for all the wonderful support and everything she does on socials. So those are our nominations. The second category is the Sort It Out Jackson Award for Best Sub. And we have got two nominees in this. The first is Callum Maycock for two goals against Franchise. And the second, and I think we all know who this came from, was any sub in a real match against a proper football club. So those are two nominations in this Sort It Out Jackson. And then we've got the Mandy Club Person of the Year. Now, I'm understanding that I think Alex was saying to people that we've called the Mandy Awards, and was speaking to Mandy about this, Mandy Barnum, the winner of last year's, and she was very, very emotional that, you know, we've got an award named after her. But both Mandy Archer have been absolutely fantastic, so they totally deserve this to be named after them. And the nominees are Chris Philo Phillips for his PA duties, especially against Franchise, Hayden the Womble, the surfing Womble, Maddie Sweetman, brilliant work at the AFC Wimbledon Foundation, Mandy Archer, reception service had always been there, Dean Parsons for all the extracurricular activities, and Tall Mark Lewis for long service to programmes. And our final award is the Who Ate All the Pies Award, the Best Plough Lane Food Outlet. And they are, you know, Brick Lane Bagels, Come and Go, which is the Greek wrap, Ding Dong, the Chinese food, Dough Shack, La Posta, My Pie, and Naked Chips. And we'll be able to tell you who's won the awards at the Will Nightingale testimonial. We'll be there and we'll be allowed to do voice notes.
The problem is that we should have added Danielle into the Club Person of the Year thing. Danielle from the ticket office. I feel, anyway. I'd give it to her, hands down. But we have already put it out there for the various contributors that we've had this season and guests we've had this season, so they've already voted, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've actually put it out to everyone who's contributed to the Sable Wombles podcast this season. So people have voted, and I'm going to be excited about the results. So it's fantastic. And then we'll rig it to as we like it, because that's the same old Womble policy. But yeah, so that's all.
We take a steer and advice, and then avoid anything Martin Drake may have suggested. That's basically, isn't it?
That's exactly what we did. Also, I just want to say, this. I was very excited, and I'm sorry that Mark and Niall missed out. On Sunday, there was a Wish versus Whopper match at Plough Lane. There was a five-a-side match, and we had three ex-players in the five-a-side team who we were against. Keith Ward was there. Andy Sullivan is brilliant, and Ray Merry were fantastic. So they were all in. They were all in this match we played against the Wish Volunteers, of which I was one. And 3-0 down, I stepped up, scored a goal, made it 3-1. I don't want to talk about it too much. Assisted with the last minute equaliser to make it 5-5. And then at that point, the ref blew the whistle and said, "Do you want to stop it and share the trophy, or should we go to penalties?" And unsurprisingly, Andy Sullivan was like, "Penalties." And we lost on penalties.
Because you missed one.
And I missed one, yes. Did I mention that? I thought I mentioned that. Inside of the post. Darn it. But yeah, it was all good. It was all good fun. And then afterwards, we all played together in a walking football on the pitch, which was brilliant. And Chris Hutchinson is like a wonderful guy, and we're doing another shout out. He scored on Plough Lane and just went off on one, which was fantastic. He was so excited about scoring on Plough Lane. But walking football is very intense and a brilliant leveller. There were people of all ages and abilities playing. It's fantastic.
So talk us through it. What are the rules in walking football? Are you literally not allowed to run?
You're not allowed to run. You always got to have one foot on the ground. You can't tackle from behind. You're meant to really block anyone who's passing, and you can take the ball off their feet, but you can't tackle from behind. It's not allowed overhead height. There are different variations of it, but this was like you can have as many touches as possible. In a lot of walking football, you can only have three touches. You're not allowed in the area. You know, the goalie's not allowed out of the area. You're not allowed in the area. But other than that, so the way it works skillfully, it's got to be passing to feet. So the downside was that, especially for my game, is you need to be able to pass accurately to someone. But, you know, it was joyous to see Sully, he's just...
He said
walking football doesn't suit his step over.
That's true.
It was a bit tricky.
It sounds like real life Sabutio. That's why I like the sound of it.
It was fun. It is real fun, and I ended up managing the team, which was a laugh. And so it was brilliant subbing Sully and Ray Merry off the pitch. That was fantastic. Subbing them off was the highlight of my day.
What a management career.
Yeah. What a management career. Oh, managing at Plough Lane. But it's good fun. I mean, and you know, both Wish and Whopper do amazing work. Brilliant.
Bringing you back full circle, obviously we've had one or two or three or four or five comments about Mr. Jackson, Johnny, JJ, or however we want to call him this week.
Yeah.
But actually, you've got to say, right through from the Grimsby game, right through both legs of Notts County, he's got it bang on, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He just seems to tactically know what's going on. He's interchanged some players. Obviously, he's had to deal with losing Hutchinson. He's had to deal with losing Omar, and he's got us playing in the right way, creating chances, looking just as parsimonious in defence as ever. Short Shorts is doing amazingly, which my wife loves, obviously, because she shares exactly the same name. So when they're cheering and singing the Welsh song, she's really quite chuffed by that.
I was thinking this. How far do you think Joe Lewis is off the Welsh squad?
He's a League Two defender, let's be realistic here. I know they're short on resources.
He seems, what you're saying, he's overqualified, Mark. Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm saying don't talk him up, because otherwise someone like Bolton will try and land him with a really quite paltry bid, which we may or may not be able to afford to turn down.
Hey, here's my final shout out, just because I want to mention it, because I don't talk too much about the football. I thought Johnson was unbelievable actually on Saturday. I thought his game was fantastic. I just think he's solid now. So I was really pleased with him actually. So that's more. I'm going to have a shout
Hippolyte.
Out.
I think Hippolyte.
Yeah, Hippolyte since he's come back. But guys, we're coming towards the end of the pod. It's been, I think we're a little bit excited, to be honest with you.
We're trying to keep it under wraps.
We're trying to keep it under wraps. But we can definitely say que sera sera. We don't need to be shushed at this moment.
We'll see you at Wembley.
Sera sera. We'll see.
We're
we'll
off the block 240 at Wembley. Yeah.
We'll see you all there at Wembley. Thank you very much, dear listener. Thank you, my friend, Niall Cooper, the man on the buttons, Adam Proctor, Mr. Mark Lewis. All it is to say is, que sera, sera, whatever will be, dear listener, we'll see you at Wembley. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.